It's your last day?
Today is his last day.
Oh, wow.
Okay, Mrs. Jennings, insurance coverage recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today I'm presenting the last step in our evaluation process for the county's insurance coverage. This was the first time that the county issued a broker RFP for insurance coverage, which requires two steps. In the past, the county would assign carriers to brokers, then select the best broker-carrier combination. On April 17th, council completed the first step of the process by awarding the RFP to Alliant Insurance Services. Today is the second step of the insurance process, which is selecting the placements of all lines of insurance coverage. To give you some history on how we've come up with today's recommendation, Alliant began marketing Sussex County's insurance program to various carriers. The agreed methodology for marketing included identifying the number of qualified markets, then send submissions to the qualified markets, and then compare the options and present options for at least three carriers, including the incumbent. In your packet, there was a summary that provides details of each line of coverage with the number of carriers approached, the number of quotes received, and the recommended carrier and cost. New carriers are being recommended for a property package, liability package, cyber, public officials, auto, workers' compensation, and airport liability. Considerable cost savings are being recognized with the new carriers. Alliant obtained quotes from multiple carriers and leveraged this position to drive the cost down. In addition to premium savings, these new carriers offer enhancements to our existing coverages, such as the ability to select our own legal counsel, increased cyber liability coverage, and replacement cost coverage for all mobile equipment. The proposal recommendations is additional two lines of insurance coverage, pollution and fiduciary. These lines are recommended to the county by both Insurance Buyers Council and Alliant. The pollution line of coverage provides coverage to all locations for events that are sudden and accidental, such as the pollution of the water table or third-party wells. The new fiduciary cover extends coverage for the management of the pension funds, which is an exclusion in our public officials' coverage. I'm happy to report that the recommended placements result in a net savings of $255,000 from our expiring costs. Scott Agar from Insurance Buyers Council, representatives from Alliant, Andrea Wall, and Jen Brazier from the Accounting Division have done a great job working together to put together this recommendation. Scott Agar has a few words to add about the process, if okay with council.
Certainly. Mr. Agar?
Good morning. The first word was wow. The results of this RFP has been exemplary. Very solid program. Expansion of coverage, cost savings. It doesn't get better than that. Very solid underwriters on your program. Many enhancements, too many to go through at this time. But it was also a pleasure for me to sort of observe the knowledge exchange that took place over the last couple of months between staff and the new broker Alliant. They've gotten up to speed very quickly. And have worked very closely with staff in particular to bring this to the table. We got the pleasure of simply observing this and vetting the results, which frankly were very impressive. So if there were any questions in regards
to... Any questions of council? Ms. Jennings, do you have any motion?
I do. Be it moved based on the recommendation of Alliant Insurance Services, Inc., Insurance Buyers Council, and the Sussex County Finance Department, that Sussex County Council authorizes the placement of insurance coverage as presented for the period of July 1, 2018 through June 30, 2019 at a cost not to exceed $1,500,774.25.
Pleasure, council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Arlett.
Second.
Second, Mr. Burton. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Arlett?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I will yes. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank everybody with Alliant and all of our staff, county staff. Anytime we can get more and pay less, that's got to be a good thing. So thank you all very, very much. Mr. Medlars, come right back up here. Request to modify the effective date.
Good morning again, Council. I'd like to advise you that we administration and engineering received a legal opinion from our county attorney that we chose the wrong vehicle to try to address an issue which has arisen. I just wanted to, Administrator, and I just want to make you aware of the issue. Want to advise you that we cannot take any action on it. However, we may want to consider issues like this in the future and write something in the code language allowing modifications, which has to be researched, I guess, with our counselors to come up with a recommendation. But this one was strictly a critical path. You intended to give relief for small units. We are pleased to see some in the pipeline. The progress, how the ordinance has progressed, was probably delayed by about 4 weeks. We had engineering and administration had continuously communicated with a couple of applicants the timeline. They had planned their projects, and so with the effective date not being June 1, as we had initially anticipated, but July 1, a couple of the projects were held up in the critical path. So not for lack of trying, and not for lack of you wishing it to proceed faster. However, it will be effective July 1, and the entities have to make adjustments or pull permits under the effective code as today. But it is on our radar, and we will continue to research on how we can address issues like this in the future in a more timely and appropriate manner. But it has to be legal, obviously, and that's the end of the story. So no motion today, Mr. President.
Well, there you go. Thank you for your report there. Thanks, Hans.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda is a discussion and presentation on matters related to buffers and density from Councilman I.G. Burton. Mr. Burton, you have the floor.
Thank you. I brought this up for, I brought buffers and density up for a discussion just to kind of see where council is on these issues. And it's been something that, you know, for the 11 years that I served on planning and zoning, we always discussed it, we should address buffers. We should look at density, and it was just talked about. And it was in our previous comp plan that said we should look at buffers and density. It's in the current comp plan that we should discuss buffers and density, and it's in the current draft plan of the future comp plan. So it's just, in my opinion, it's just time to time to talk about it. It's time to quit not talking about it. It's time to start talking about it. And so I have three issues that I would like to just talk about, and as they relate to, there's two on buffers and one on density, and I just, you know, I'd like to get some feedback from council and try and figure out if there is enough interest to proceed to another step, whatever that step may be. And So the first one is the calculation of density, and it just never made sense to me our two units to the acre density calculation, I think is a generous density, and then to allow that density to be calculated on lands that are unbuildable. It doesn't make sense to me. I we're talking about building homes or commercial or just building homes, no matter what they are, and we allow the calculation of that density to include ponds and wetlands and man-made streams and just whatever's on the property. And I got tough time with that math formula, and I have some examples. And this is a subdivision where all the blue is waterways, and in those waterways was there's 14 acres on the site, 4.8 of it is water or wetlands, and it is in an MR district, which is 4 units to the acre. So in the 4.8 acres of water and wetlands, you get to calculate another 17 units, 16 and whatever the math is, 4 times 4.8, and put them as buildable lots. And I got kind of a hard time with that one. So there's a man-made waterway where they're calculating the density on the blue, and then to go to the next one, this is a wetlands calculation, right? So there's 14.79 acres of total land. 4.1 is the wetlands, which is the green, and it is MR as well. So they're getting 16 additional units for calculating land they can't build on. And that just troubles me. And I got one more, I think, right? No. And so that's kind of the discussion, is that we've always done this in the past. We're not sure where it came from. And here we are now. And is this something that this council has? Does anybody else see this as a density calculation issue that we should continue on with?
Conversation.
Can we start in here? Of course, you know I do.
Mr. Arlett.
Well, George, you've been here long.
No, go ahead.
I think common sense would dictate that one should consider buildable as part of the equation, right? Because ultimately that's what you're focused on, is the building land and not the areas that you can't build on. So I think density is an important conversation that we continue to have on this council, and then how you calculate that density. So I think no clue as far as the historical context of how it got there, or maybe it just came there because it was easy, right? Could be. Maybe it was just easy. This, how many acres, 2 units the acre, and that's what you get. Without taking into consideration the buildable footprint. So I think common sense would say that yes, I think I would concur that we should and perhaps need to look at the buildable area. So I would agree with you, Councilman Burton, on that. But I would love to hear from Mr. Cole, as he's been here for 32 years, and hear your context as it relates to this very subject.
Well, I'll just say this. A lot of it started probably in where is ever he's down there. He's been around as long as I have.
Ooh, that's like, wait a minute.
No, we started about the same time. In this thing. Anyway, my guess is a lot of it started prior to when wetlands were important, because you can go to down along the beach area. There's many of the old campgrounds, and the one you first showed up there, which I'm very familiar with. Those were dug before when you were allowed to dig them. There weren't any rules. So back then we didn't address wetlands. When they dug them out and changed them, we were looking at the density of the sites, because you could fill them, you could do all kinds of things back then before there were rules. And I think what has happened, then rules came along, but we didn't change our rules. We didn't adapt with the changes. And I know in an AR1 subdivision, IG, you can't, and this is still left over from basically when we started zoning in the 70s. You get an AR1 subdivision, and now that you've got wetlands, in the old days, if you had wetlands, it didn't matter. But now you have wetlands, well, you can't really develop those wetlands in the AR1 subdivision. That's our base zoning for this county, is AR1 subdivision. So in that scenario, you can't do it. But then if you come in and get a conditional use or do this and that, all of a sudden, the doors opened up and we started permitting, if you want to look at it as a bonus. You're getting a bonus now. And I'll guarantee you, when developers go out and buy and purchase land, they're not paying a whole lot for that wetlands because of the difficulty dealing with it. So, you know, what has happened and has occurred over the years is we've just been very generous with using computing our density calculations. And I've argued it for years, but it fell on deaf ears. But these are good examples. And Many of the jurisdictions in Sussex County, some of the towns, they don't permit you to use density calculations for your wetlands. And pretty much, I think that's the general rule of thumb throughout the country. So, and again, we it's a good time to look at it. I'm glad, you know, that you're concerned about it. I am concerned about it, and continue. And I've always, in the past, argued when a conditional use comes in and they're getting all this great density because of the wetlands. And I would argue, and many times the councils would support a little bit, a token amount of maybe cutting the numbers back or something like that. But there was still a very generous density calculation when you included parcels of ground that had significant amounts of wetlands. I drove down after a storm down Coastal Highway between Fenwick and South Bethany, and you look off to the left there on the Bayside. It was right after a good northeastern. There was one little sand dune on this one parcel that was exposed, and that parcel was up for a rezoning, and the rest of it was all wetlands and went out into the bay, some of it underwater. And the developers and the county council at the time was very receptive to approving a lot of this stuff. Anyway, it didn't bother them one bit. And we took a tour because it was a big storm, and we went down there. And I pointed out to a couple of my fellow council people, I said, that's the piece that they're asking for, I forget how many units. And all you could see was one little piece of ground. And anyway, they were able to calculate all the stuff. And so we're permitting too much to be jammed in on these small parcels in our most environmentally sensitive areas. And I mean, we're way behind the eight ball, I think. So anyway, I could go on, but that's pretty much it.
Yes, sir. Could we just, for the public's benefit, talk about how one determines wetlands? I mean, what entity, you know?
Tell us how it works.
Explain that piece, if you don't mind, for our general public.
Natural Resource takes care of that part.
No,
actually,
Army Corps.
A soil scientist, if it determines that there's a waterway or something on a property, it is in code that a soil scientist, a licensed soil scientist, will actually have to go out and delineate wetlands, and they determine where the wetlands are on the property, and that is based on a number of different criteria that have been developed, not by the county, but nationally, as to what determines what wetlands are.
And I would say that would be the part that would be concerning for me.
Wait a minute, that person sends it to the Army Corps. They have to approve.
Depending if it is a jurisdictional wetland, it has to go to the Army Corps of Engineers for a review and approval. If they're going to be anywhere near it, or depending on how large the wetlands are, if there's some smaller wetlands, it does not require
state approval. State to look. Nobody looks over that soil scientist's.
They are signing and sealing the document that says there are wetlands, and that is the location of the wetlands on the plans.
But so when they come back, okay, I'll ask you the question, do the property owners question sometimes these reports?
That I can't answer, because that's the property owner, if they're coming in with an application, they are hiring that soil scientist to do that. If they have concerns about where it is, they would discuss that with the soil scientist. And then again, if they have concerns, if it's title and jurisdictional, then they would talk to DENREC and the Army Corps about that.
And is that sometimes a moving target? I mean, at the federal level, right? At the federal level, which is where the scientists try these rules, if you would, are regulations that are determining the wetlands. Is that sometimes a moving target?
That I can't answer. I don't believe they've updated a definition of wetlands in a while. A soil scientist could better answer that question.
I think we ought to get more confirmation on that one, and I'll tell you why, IG, because that part would concern me. If we are giving up our property rights decision-making process, right, by another entity that exists out there, that is being controlled by some other method, we're giving up our authority on property rights at the local level. And I would want to dig a little deeper into that process, whatever that process is, because that's what's determining what's buildable, what's not buildable. So if we go down this path, and I'm not saying I agree with you, but it concerns me that we are giving up our authority as the as the body, the governmental body that makes the land use decisions to another entity that's not here with us. And I would want to perhaps maybe have a scientist come in here, learn a little bit more about what their process is and who determines their process. And if it's a political one, again, that would concern me, because we all know sometimes in Washington, right, the movement of EPA as an example and various entities changes based on the tide of the flavor of the administration that's there. And so I would want to dig a little deeper into that as we proceed. That would be something that would be of concern for me, and want clarity as we give up our quote-unquote rights to another entity.
Well, keep in mind,
I believe we already have.
Well, Rob, keep in mind, we do rely on, every time we make a land use decision, we rely on any number of agencies, because we don't have them here at the county level, unless we wanted to have a person on staff to do it. And we've chosen over the years, and I think state law requires it, that we go to these agencies. So we always have done getting agents. But this is just another agency. So when the Army Corps has determined something, those are the rules of the game at the time. And do rules change? Sure, things have changed over the years, but it's not a move. You make it sound like every week it might change, or every month or every year. No, it doesn't change like that. It's not a moving target. The rules get established, and we go with them until they get changed. And it's like anything else.
But again, I'll reiterate that when you right now, it's very clear, very black and white. 2 units to the acre, period. It's based on the geographical boundaries of that parcel, right? Not the buildable piece, but it's the parcel. That's not a moving target. And that is how we make decisions today. When we shift into something that is into wetlands, and those areas are determined by another entity, by another organization, it would be a moving target, potentially. It's not as black and white as it is today, because I mean, obviously, as we all just learned from a few days ago, this massive amount of rain, right, it's problematic. And, you know, how they determine what's wetlands and what's not, again, would determine density, buildable units, right? That's my point.
Okay, but the soil point. Scientists already have the criteria. They know how to determine it, because they do it every day, every week, every month.
Right.
Every application in front of us has had to get that scrutiny. So we're doing it. It's just that in the AR1 subdivision, you're right, 2 units to the acre. Right. But on that example, if that was just single-family home lots, which is all that's permitted in the AR1 subdivision, unless you ask for a change, right?
Regarding residential, correct.
Right, okay. You wouldn't be able, though, to put any roads. You couldn't use the wetlands for anything. They could be incorporated in a lot, but you couldn't compute and get that 2 units to the density. So you would take back out pretty much all that and out for roads and everything else, and you end up with a much smaller number. So we've never truly gotten 2 units to the acre on a piece of ground that has wetlands and other, you know, other, there may be other issues. But so it's just that's the base density, but it doesn't happen that way. In reality, they're not benefiting in the AR1 subdivision. That's why many times they will go in and look for the conditional use or change of zone and the RPC and other things, because in those other categories, this council has gone back and used those areas that they couldn't have used originally, but now they can. So that's, I think, what IG is talking about.
Yeah, but in this example, right, that is an MR zoned piece of property. So now your numerator becomes 4, right? Because it's not the AR zoning,
right?
It becomes the MR zoning.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if it was something else, right? If it was AR, it'd be 2. If it was MR, if it was,
but the same rules apply.
The same rules apply, but the right. Math equation changes dramatically. Right? And I do think that the wetlands delineation criteria is strictly trust based. They come in and they say, there's the wetlands, and you know, Ed Lene is does most of them, and I think he's very good at what he does.
Sure.
But it's Ed Lene's survey on that piece of property.
Right.
I mean, I don't, you know, and I think he's excellent at what he does. I just think that we're trusting his deal, and I don't know what researching would the criteria, because is it federally based? Does he work all, where do his guidelines come from?
State and federal?
I believe they're both state and federal, determined what the makeup of a wetlands are. And it's the soil type, plant type, you know, those all go into consideration of what determines a wetland.
And I would be okay having Ed come in and say, you know,
here's how it works.
This is how it works, and give us some examples and what he does and how he calculates it.
I think years ago, and I can't remember exactly when, I think we had a situation where there was testimony during the public hearing process. Developer had his plan say something like this, showing wetlands. And I think a residence or somebody testimony was, that's not correct. And I believe we actually, you know, had the soil scientist, may have been Ed LeMayek, I don't know who it was, but I think we challenged to have that reviewed. I don't know if we sent it to DNREC or something, but I believe we sent it up the road to another agency, and we, you know, waited for that response to come back. And they'll come upon request. The federal people will get from behind their desk in Philadelphia and come down here and do a check on something if it's questioned. But they get the maps, and as long as they're in the maps and close to the maps, and Ed follows the maps, and then he does what vegetation, and he does soil types, and he does a number of things that he checks off, and that's basically how they do it. But it can be challenged, and it has been, but not often.
Right. I'm not disagreeing that we should look at this, because I do. Should be cautious about it, is all I'm saying, is because maybe nobody cared before because it didn't affect their 2 units to the acre calculation. This will dictate the 2 units to the acre piece, where they, what, how many
change
units they can build.
Sure, will. Wouldn't change a thing, would it?
Right now, any application anywhere can count wetlands.
Right now, but we're looking at potentially changing that.
But the AR1 subdivision, when you lay out the lots, The cluster
change.
Is the only one it would change right there. Thank you, Vince.
A standard
right. Cluster you can circumvent a little bit, get an extra dozen.
Right.
Right.
So that's
redundant impact it that much.
But what
I'm
just what, any other thoughts? I'm just curious what you might have as far as what your thoughts are, or Sam's, or you know, others, what your opinions are.
Well, natural resources won't allow it. Won't allow them to build a cluster unless you got central sewer. If you don't have central sewer, just forget it. Natural resources also tells you how many houses you can build per acre with central sewer. If you don't have central sewer, they tell you two houses per acre. Or actually
based on soil types.
And actually it has to be 150 feet apart.
But it's based, if there's no sewer around,
it's
based on soil type. So you may have it.
You might have to build a mound.
Right. You may have an acre here, but the next piece, because the soils are so bad, it might have to take 2 acres to find a site to put the septic system. So you see sometimes people who take a piece of ground and develop it out in the rural area that have no infrastructure being sewer, right? The lots aren't 3/4 acre lots lined right up. They're all different sizes because you've got to find that place to put that mound system or whatever.
They used to be half acre lots. Now
used to be, right?
Now we're going.
Well, that's before mound systems and all that, Sam, right?
All right. It used to be 100 foot frontage. Now they're going up 150 foot.
Okay.
But I think that.
Unless you're going to central sewer. Central sewer's got a lot to do with it.
Sure.
You have central sewer, you just bother. Throw your cap in and say, I got to put central sewer in because you can't. You'll waste all your land.
The septic. Yeah.
If you don't have a regular septic in central sewer.
I mean, certainly I think the conversation is one that we need to have. I mean, first thought, it doesn't make a lot of sense that you calculate someplace you can't build on as part of buildable acres of how many houses you get. It'd be good to hear from Mr. Lene, is that his name, Lene?
Ed Lene, he's one.
As to what, or whoever, what, how they look at that thing, to how they judge, how they determine wetlands and all that process they go through. We all learn something probably. And then I think it'd be good to hear from the public on what their view would be. But I certainly think that the first time you think about it, if somebody says you can count lands that you can't build on into your grand scheme of how many pieces you own on that property, doesn't make a lot of common sense. It might be, makes sense some other way, I don't know that, but I think it's a good thing to have a conversation about. I see no reason why we wouldn't have a conversation and allow whatever, Mr. Coleman.
No, I just, the point then, Mike, following up on that is, we just don't want to have maybe Ed Lanay, but we ought to, Todd, if we follow what Mike's idea is, we get it, do something and do it as quick as possible, because we want to move this along. Get somebody from the private sector, get somebody from the state, and maybe somebody who's got knowledge of the federal level, and I see Mr. Basin out there with the Inland Bays, maybe he knows individuals or something, but get about, you know, a couple, have a presentation, you know, we got some nice screens here, and then, but not that, we don't need a big workshop, I think just get on agenda.
Right. How they do that, that's all. Right.
But I would ask one question, that would be, what's the goal? I mean, what's the goal? Is it trying to determine a better way of calculating the density, or is it protecting our environment, or is it a combination thereof? I'm just kind of curious. What's the goal?
All of the above.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Burton, you're still up.
So you're gonna make sure I understand. We're gonna put together a presentation for a future Tuesday meeting to discuss.
What are they called, Janelle? What's the terminology?
Wetlands determination.
Soil scientist.
And to discuss the process of wetland determination,
right, how they
and delineation.
Determine all that stuff, yeah.
Okay. And maybe the conservation district, Todd, I don't know if there's any input that they could give us. Janelle, do you think they have any stake in this conversation?
Sure.
We can reach out to them, and
sure,
if they're interested, okay, they can invite.
No, that's right. They might be a good one because they
call Jessica.
They deal with the problems of having wetlands and flooding and different things and stuff like that. Okay, good.
Well, that might feed into my next one, right? And that's just a buffer discussion from wetlands. And, you know, this is one that I just think that we have to look at what buffers do for us from an environmental standpoint, from a quality of life standpoint, from a water quality standpoint, from a flooding standpoint, and we have to say, does our current code add or subtract from those goals? And this again is something that's in the last two comprehensive land use plan. It's in our current draft, and I think it's worthy of a discussion. The 100-foot number that Mr. Burdett referenced was one that was originally put up, I believe, by Denrec years ago. It didn't. It went to court and it failed. So it reverted back to the county's land use decision. It wasn't a Denrec decision. It was a county's decision. And so here we are at the county. So I just think that this is, you know, that buffer wetlands are really why a lot of people are here in the Inland Bays and the bay. It just they're just too important to our economy, to the nature that we have, to the scenic views that we have, to everything that makes this county what I personally really like about it. And I think we should talk about that. I have, let's go to the who's running the projector? You? Go to the, I call it the basin slide. This is page 3 of your ordinance, this thing here. And this is a buffer ordinance comparison between Newcastle, Kent, Sussex County, New Jersey, and critical areas of Maryland, right? So it kind of shows that Newcastle and Kent, just on the tidal wetlands, are at 100, and Sussex County is at 50. On the non-tidal, Sussex County is at zero. I don't know what zero is doing for us. I got an idea. Headwaters, zero. In comparison, we aren't at the same of our other two counties. That doesn't make it right or wrong, but it's pretty glaring that we're not a little bit off, we're a lot off. And I think we should just talk about that. And so to take that, what we have now, to put it into examples, roll me back a slide. Here's the same development that shows that a lot of this wetlands that is counted as buildable is right up against the property lines. And I just can't see where that makes a good sense if we're trying to protect our waterways and we're trying to protect our natural vegetation and we're trying to protect our landscaped areas. I mean, it's the wetlands. They're getting the density, for the wetlands. Then we have very little buffer, and then we're trying to take those two items and put as much as you can on that site. And it just seems incorrect to me. And this one's even worse of example. If you look at that DWGS4 and go to the left of it, and you take that lot right there. I mean, I don't know how that makes sense with a buffer ordinance.
Is that a waterway there, or is that a roadway?
Roadway.
I can see why they can get away with it.
And that is using our current buffer ordinance. And then if you look at the townhouses that are right at that blue circle that Janelle just did, I mean, they're right into the property line. So I have concern with our current buffer deal. Does 100 feet work for everything? No. Is it a good starting point? Should streams be different? Probably, right? But I just think we have to look at this with eyes wide open on what is happening to our protected waterways, our protected wetlands. We just can't keep doing what we're doing and expect a different result. And that's the frustration, is that we sit here and complain. We sit here and have this concern, and then nothing changes.
I'll point out something which dawned on me not too many years ago, but I live on the water. And the front of my house is on this private lane, right? So I have to be 30 feet off my private lane. The rear property line is the Indian River Bay. And so I can be 10 feet off. And then guess what? My property line is out in the water because it eroded. And then when a bulkhead was built, I'm in. So I can theoretically, because if they come into our planning and zoning office, they will look at the rear property line. They'll not have anything designating that it is on a natural waterway, on a canal, or anything. And my rear property line, I could probably build right on the edge, because I got 10 feet that I've lost over the, before I bought it, I guess, or whatever. So that is another mistake, And if you go to, there's this campground, which looks like we call, I call it scorched earth. I got that name from somebody else, but they've got different things placed right on the edge of the water. Well, it's the rear. The lane in front is where their setback is. The rear, which is the most important part, which is right, again, on natural little body, I mean, natural bodies of water, they've got sod and everything else right down to the edge, so they're fertilizing or doing all this stuff. And we don't have any buffer there. So we're killing ourselves. We're spending a bunch of taxpayers' money to try to straighten things up, and here we are approving stuff in our, and that's in our naturally and sensitive environmentally developing district that we don't even take into consideration. The rear of a property that may be on such a critical spot. So again, I agree with you. We need to be looking at things differently, and it doesn't hurt anything because we'll still have development. We'll have good development. Prices will go up with more protections on the environment. As a realtor, I have seen property values go up when you show and can prove there's these protections. The people coming from other areas want to see it.
George, are you practicing what you're preaching?
I'm 40 feet. I'm probably 40 feet my house is from the
you
water.
You put more dirt in there, fill in all that land you lost in the back of your house, right?
No, there was a bulkhead when I bought the place. I bought it. It was built in 57.
So you practice what you're preaching?
No, I bought a house that was built in 57. It was existing. I'm 40 feet back
from it. Does it make it right? Go ahead and change everybody else's because you got your way.
No. I'm just saying there's a problem in the way we look at things. Sam, if your goal is to try to show to protect runoff and everything else that we know we've heard about over the years about what makes the bays deteriorate,
you know,
there's a lot of runoff, whether it's stormwater runoff, whether it's runoff from people's yards, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just saying the way we do things, we don't take into consideration there's a natural body of water back there, and we should.
You know, some years ago when we first came on, Mike remembers that. Is talking about a 100-foot buffer, right? And actually, it's not the county's decision. We didn't make that decision. This private is one sued about 100-foot. They sued Natural Resources and said you can't be 100 feet, and they won the case. So we're going to have to go to the judge and tell him that he made a bad decision.
It may be the reasons that they lost were other reasons other than, but maybe Everett can shed some light on that.
Yes, on the case that you mentioned, actually the county was involved in that lawsuit as well as some private landowners, and it was strictly based on the DENREC bureaucratic regulations that were passed as opposed to the state legislature passing the law for that. So it went through a regulation, and the regulations changed it, and the court said that the legislature had previously given zoning authority to Sussex County. Sussex County was the one that was a zoning decision. The legislature could have changed that, in effect taking away our zoning authority on that, but the bureaucracy could not be done by legislation. And on another matter, Mr. President, if I may, just for thought and for your discussion, you know, and again, this goes back historically how we got to this point. People traditionally, when you look at the marshes, people realize that's wetlands, and also people see the rivers and streams. A lot of the places that we're discussing now are not rivers, streams, and those kind of places. And it was determined through the wetlands designations where they are, and oftentimes not what people would typically classify as wetlands because they're not connected to those natural waterways. Recently, and it's been several years ago now, there were some revisions made to mapping, and a much larger percentage of woodland in Sussex County that are nowhere near waterways are being declared as wetlands if you look at those maps. And that's one of the things you need to consider in your discussion. Are you going to have the same type of buffers from them as well, and also isolated wetlands still?
In many jurisdictions, Everett, just have watershed type of ordinances. So a watershed is a little different than some of these other issues we're all talking about. So there's a couple different categories, and we probably have to find out what we're talking about, because we can't use the same probably for all of them. I totally agree with you.
100% right.
No, I think this will, because I am familiar with what Mr. Moore just spoke about, and designation of what is actually being farmed to be declared wetlands is not something that I think we should look to change. You know, I think we should try to address the issues that are causing environmental concern, the depletion of the natural habitat, the preservation of the trees to help with the flooding, all of those issues, which are really coming at us fast, is something that we need to, I don't want to make a, you know, this isn't decision time, because there's just, this will take a lot more massaging, and I'm looking for a recommendation on how are we doing that?
Well, how about, like Mike said last time, similar, why don't we put on the agenda some expert on what, the different types of things we're looking at. Here's a watershed, here's this, and then maybe Janelle can look. I know Maryland has watershed protections. Maybe Mr. Basin out here can shed some light on these different things and the different ways they should be treated, and scientifically, what's are more important than others, and things of that nature.
Right now, I can show you a lot of wetlands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think farmers are allowed to farm. Nobody's saying you can't farm wetlands.
All right, so that's
else on
that's
this
a you clear, Todd?
So now we have two presentations on similar topics, but I heard in the first topic that we don't want a workshop.
Right.
Don't want a workshop here?
Still
either.
No workshop.
Well, why not? I'm just curious of what would be the advantage or disadvantage of having a workshop?
If we did a workshop here, not a workshop in the West Complex, we would have everyone come in. It would be an afternoon workshop. I would propose same setup, but more of a broader discussion, and you don't feel like you are under a crunch time to get through an agenda with council action items. This would be a discussion for the five of you.
Each of these discussions
may
lead
to a workshop.
Okay.
That's
presentation first.
Presentation of definition, because I can tell you I'm unclear.
Okay.
Right? I mean, to Everett's comment of, you know, farmland being deemed wetlands that's not the goal, to create a buffer around a farmed area.
Okay.
Right? So we need help on trying to determine the areas of concern.
This would be more than a 15-minute presentation that we get from a lot of groups that come in at the top of the agenda.
Yes.
This would probably be a block of time,
sure,
on these subjects. Okay.
With selected speakers that are, yeah, pros and cons. And,
perfect.
You know.
I understand.
Is that agreed?
Would it make sense? I mean, is there any reason why we think that we would not, from that point, move on to a workshop? I'm just wondering.
I think
if we should just go straight to a workshop and take a step out and just go right there. I'm wondering.
I personally would rather try and get a defined area in which the workshop would work, right? Here are the definitions of different wetlands. Mm-hmm. So where is our areas of concerns? And let's work on them. I don't know if it's the right,
something to talk about.
Bert, you still got the floor?
I got one more. And it's along the same lines. It's a buffer, and